Hello, Robbie Buck joining you for Life Matters this morning. Hope you're well. What role does music play in your life? These days it's all around us. It's used for advertising and for entertainment. It's in the elevator and in the supermarket, and sometimes it can be tough to escape. But on other occasions, music can play a very different role. In exceptional cases, it possesses the ability to transcend, to take you to higher emotional planes. And very, very occasionally, it might just change the way you look at your life. That's what we're talking about today on Life Matters. The number here is 1300 225 576. Is there a piece of music that has played a pivotal role in your life, become lodged in your very fibre, and in its own way, changed who you are and how you view the world?
Sad song and make it better.
The very thought of you, and I forget to do.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
But in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
So what is it in the brain that makes us respond so powerfully to music? What's going on between your ears as you listen to a favourite song? And how is it that a snippet of a song can open the brain to a flood of memory, a certain time, a place, a person, all triggered by that single tune? We all have at least one piece of music that marks a significant moment in our lives. Today, I want to know what piece of music it is for you. What's the song that marked an essential moment in your life and why? Who knows? Perhaps it even changed the course of your life in its own way. The number here, 1300 225 576. That's 1300-CALL-RN. If you're in South Australia or you're in the Northern Territory, you need to call me now. 1300 225 576. And if you're in Western Australia, you can ring our listener line on 02 833 1430. Of course, you can also comment online via the webpage at abc.net.au/radionational. Just look for Life Matters, or on our Facebook or Twitter handle as well, at RN Life Matters. What one piece of music, what song has played a pivotal role in your life? Well, to talk about this rather fascinating topic, I'm joined by Associate Professor Nikki Ricard from the School of Psychology and Psychiatry at Monash University in Melbourne. Her work looks closely at how music interacts with our emotions, and also by Dr. Katrina McFerrin, Head of Music Therapy at the Melbourne Conservatorium of Music. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
First up, let's talk about a piece of music that is important or pivotal in your own lives, just to begin with. Associate Professor Nikki Ricard, what about you?
I think some of the pieces that you just played all touched special nerves with me. There were some really special pieces there. The very thought of you was actually one of the pieces that has enormous meaning for me. It was my favourite song from my childhood. My parents,
really?
It was their special love song. So quite a few of the pieces there had special memories, and I think a lot of people have that. You know, they were well-chosen pieces. I think one of the ones for me that really shifted things was by a band called The Tea Party.
Canadian band.
Rock, yeah, Canadian band. But it was the first time I shifted music tastes, and it was an important part of my life. And there was a song called Correspondences that sort of wrapped up everything I've learnt since then about music and emotion. It captured so many aspects that I feel are important and really changed my path and even consolidated what I was doing in research at the time and shifted my path in a career. So Correspondences is a special one for me.
All right. What about you, Dr. Katrina McFerrin? A piece of music, a song that has played a pivotal role in your life?
Oh, it's such a wonderful question, and I'm sure there are many people like me who find it difficult to choose one. But if I have to, I'd probably say that there was a great remix of Sarah McLachlan's Angel that really touched me, not just because the words were so emotional and talking about the connections that we have to people, but also because it helped me transition into more electronic music and to recognise what a fantastic genre it was, equivalent to classical music in my training.
Let's talk about what music is, because there are, I imagine, a lot of interpretations as to what is music, what is real music, and we'll get to some of those over the course of this conversation. But, Nikki, when it comes to classifying what music is, how do we go about such a task?
Again, another big question.
Yeah.
It's really hard to define music, and we still haven't got there. If we try to classify it as a, you know, a group of pattern sounds in time, it really limits a lot of really interesting music. For instance, there's music by John Cage that is a period of silence that goes on for more than 4 minutes, and that's still considered clearly music. So I don't think we try to define it. Music is what people feel it is and what they appreciate.
That said, there are components to music that the brain starts to resonate with, aren't there? There's timbre, and there's melody, and there's tempo, those sorts of areas. How does the brain correspond or relate to elements of music?
Yeah, so because music has so many aspects to it, it has, as you say, all those different structural elements to the music itself, they get represented in a whole range of different areas of the brain. So it's a very distributed process in the brain, and it's one of the magical things about music is that it seems to recruit more areas of the brain than nearly any other function that we do. There's no little part of the brain that is a music module. It actually does get represented in pitch areas, timing areas, but beyond all those structures of music, then it taps onto deeper areas, even things important for survival, like preparing us for the same responses we get for preparing for fight or for flight can be activated by music. So there's alerting responses, but there's also clearly emotional responses and links to memory that all play a role. When a simple piece of music can be played, we can have all these responses happening in the brain.
So it's pretty powerful, in other words.
That's right,
yeah.
It is.
Let's take a few calls this morning. 1-300-225-576. We're talking about the power of music to play a role in your life, and perhaps there's a song or a piece of music that has done that for you. 1-300-225-576. That's the number here for our Friday talkback on Life Matters. Sally's in Victoria. Hello there, Sally.
Hi.
So what
Hi,
about,
Robbie.
What about you? Is there a piece of music that has played a pivotal role in your life?
Yes, there is. About 40 years ago, I'd not long left England to come and live in Australia with my husband and two small children. And everything seemed to be really bad, gloomy, and I'd left all friends and family in England and really depressed. And I thought it could all be solved by packing my bags and leaving my husband until I heard this particular song, and it made me change my mind.
Really?
Turned my life around. I had another 15 years in that marriage and got the kids grown up, and you know, it really made a difference.
So the million-dollar question is, what was the song that was powerful enough to do that?
Eleanor Rigby.
The Beatles.
Yep. It was the words, it was the thought of all the lonely people, and it was the music itself. It just, you know, really made me rethink my life and realise what I got.
Where did you hear it? Was it on the radio?
I was gardening. I was pulling weeds out in this backyard and thinking, I've got to get out of here, I'm packing my bags, I'm going. And it just came on the radio, and I thought, there's another way of looking at it.
And was it an immediate epiphany for you?
I think it was. I think I thought, you know, all the lonely people, that's how they live their lives, and I didn't want to be one of them.
Of course, you eventually did end up in Australia. What was the story there?
Oh, well, after 15 years or so, I we did find that we weren't that suited to each other, although we got through the important part of raising the kids, and we separated and divorced, and I'm now pretty happily integrated with an Australian husband.
When you hear Eleanor Rigby again, when it comes on the radio, if you hear it coming out of a set of speakers, what's your response to it then?
Oh, I go right back into that backyard, pulling the weeds out and thinking I'm packing my bags. So, you know, I'll never feel any other way about it. It saved that part of my life, really.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Kelly.
Sally. Okay.
Good on you.
Bye.
Kay is in Melbourne. Hello there, Kay.
Oh, good morning, Robbie.
Yeah, a piece of music that's played a pivotal role in your life.
It certainly did. I think it was about 1957, I first met my husband at a New Year dance in Picton in New Zealand, and the first dance we had together was to the music of Georgia by Ray Charles.
Oh, fantastic song.
And then, for some reason or other, I had to be home by midnight, and we missed out on having another dance together. But a year later, I went to a dance in Christchurch on my nursing holidays, and I re-met him. And lo and behold, the music was on again. It was a really big dance, this place, with a huge big band, and they were belting out all sorts of stuff, and then Georgia came on. We had a dance, and he said, well, I think we should get married sometime, or get engaged, because don't let's get lost again. And years later, when he was diagnosed with motor neuron disease, we had a little radio that we could play old tapes on, which we always used to have in the car. And I found all these old tapes, and we started playing all the Ray Charles stuff. So Ray Charles, but especially Georgia, they're the things. So all the time that he was totally disabled with motor neuron disease, we had Ray Charles with us a lot.
So it's a thread that's carried right through that relationship for you as well.
Definitely. 48 years of marriage.
Yeah, very powerful indeed. Thanks so much for your call this morning.
Thank you. Great program. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we'll get to music as therapy as well, because obviously it's being used more and more in that way. But Katrina, can I come back to you? Just talking about that emotional resonance. Sally talked about hearing a song on the radio and having that moment that changed the next 15 years of her life, which might surprise a lot of people that music can have that indefinable power, if you like, to change the course in some ways. What's your response to a story like that?
I think that's why I find it so difficult, why music therapists often find it so difficult to believe that it's qualities like the melody or the rhythm that have a particular impact, because you can hear how individual that is. That song didn't have that impact on everybody. It had that impact on one person in a very profound way. So what we know from our practice is that songs and pieces of music, they impact people uniquely in their individual situation, and our job is to go and hear those stories and to use those connections that people have established to help them and support them, as they have done in the lives of your callers. So where they're using music as self-therapy, we're able to help people who are more vulnerable and then to build on that. So if there is a particular song that is meaningful to you, what's the next song that's a step away that we could also use to intensify the impact and the assistance of the song in helping you?
It's very slippery though, isn't it? In the same way that it's difficult to even classify what music is, to try and pinpoint what elements of it are the ones that are affecting you, I take it, is also a difficult process. What's some of the research in this area?
Well, the research is extremely diverse, because we constantly seek and dream to find something very simple. and we do find some simple things. You can entrain your bodily movements to rhythm, for example. So you can use particular tempos in pieces to help you rehabilitate your walking and gradually increase that. So there are some simplistic aspects to music. But otherwise, what we do tend to find is that individual preferences that happen in a cultural context, so it depends where you live, what's going on in your life, that helps determine which songs, which pieces are going to be most helpful for you. And often what we have to do is improvise, make entirely new music up, whether it's using instruments to play together or whether it's just writing entirely new songs, because that's actually where the power of music can be, not just in listening to material that already exists, but also in creating your own material that represents absolutely what's going on for you.
Which is something that perhaps we might have done in the past a little more, that is create our own music when we weren't surrounded by pre-recorded music as much as we are today.
Yeah, I love to have that fantasy too. You know, I've heard so many beautiful stories of people on the back of vans going out to church picnics and how they used to substitute the song lyrics very easily and casually without this kind of sense that they weren't good enough to do that. But if you think about it, new technologies have made music incredibly available again. Most kids play with GarageBand and write new tracks.
This is the program that we're talking about on the computer, yeah.
Yeah, so it's available again. I actually think that it's kind of come full circle.
Let's take some more calls this morning. This is Life Matters on RN. Tracy is in Queensland. Hello there, Tracy.
Hi.
So we're talking about music and its ability to play a role in your life and even at times change the course of your life. How about you? What's your experience with music?
About 14 years ago, I had my first son. Well, he was stillborn when I was 20 weeks pregnant. Anyway, I've always been a mainstream music sort of person as far as my tastes go, but the counsellor I was seeing at that time lent me a CD that was basically, I mean, I can't remember what it was called, but it wasn't like songs to grieve to, but that was pretty much the purpose of it. And it was a compilation of classical music. And for the time that I was at home sort of grieving, 6 weeks or whatever after the pregnancy, that was the only thing that I could listen to. And I just played it over and over and over. And its healing qualities were quite mind-boggling, particularly because, as I said, classical music really isn't my thing. I've never been into it before or since, but that period of time, the CD was just incredible.
What tone of music was it that you were listening to? Was it somber in its form, or was it uplifting?
Probably not uplifting, but they were fairly well-known classical tunes.
Yeah.
That had obviously been, you know, tested in some sort of way. I think it was a promo CD put out by, I don't know whether it was a pharmaceutical company.
Right, yeah. It raises a very interesting point, and we'll get to that in a moment, and that is the way that so-called sad music, when you are feeling sad, can actually lift your sense of mood, which is counterintuitive, but obviously there's a lot of research and a lot of experience that is the case. Thanks ever so much for your call, Tracy.
Yeah.
Good on you. 1300 225 576 is the number here for Life Matters this morning. Greg's in New South Wales. Good morning, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, music that has played a pivotal role in your life.
I remember when I was about 18 in a share house in Hobart in Tasmania. I was studying science at the time. And I walked into the kitchen and Joni Mitchell's Amelia was playing. And the line, like Icarus ascending on beautiful, foolish arms, played. And it just hit me. And I sat back and thought, how does someone put a line like that, which embodies classical images, into a popular song? And then when I listened closer, it had a key change in it. And it switched to 3/4 time effortlessly without any strain. And I just remember thinking, I want to do that. I want to chase out those kinds of elements and see if I can write. So it eventually led me to writing novels.
Really? So that song led you to a path of writing novels? That's incredible.
Well, I just kind of, it was just... it's just such a beautiful image, and it seemed to embody the whole creative process as well, where you rise up on beautiful, foolish arms, and often you fail, and often you fall, like Icarus, but you try to kind of embody something, so...
And Joni Mitchell is such a distinctive, quite unique songwriter, not just her vocal delivery, but the way that she writes... and the interplay of her instruments with her musicians is pretty special too, isn't it?
Well, that was the thing within that song when I pulled it apart a little bit more and found these key changes and time signature changes, which, as I said, were just effortless. You know, I just thought, wow.
How do the novels go?
Not too bad. My first novel, Consumption, has got like a passage where someone does hear another song by Joni Mitchell and falls in love.
Paying your dues to the original inspiration. Good on you, Greg. Thanks for your call this morning. Glad to hear from you. Nikki Ricard, can I come back to you? Something that Tracy mentioned before, and it is a really interesting point, this idea of if you are in a somber mood or a sad mood, that it's music that is equivalent to that, that actually helps you get out of it. And that is counterintuitive in its own way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a common finding that often you might want to pep people up with happier or more uplifting music if they're feeling sad or they're grieving, but it's the worst thing at the time. It's not going to match their mood. They're not going to be able to cope with that sort of music. The preferred music at that time is often either calm music, which can be, in the case of your caller, can actually calm physiologically the body and allow them some respite, and that can initially be a really important point to give them some time out so then they can get back to other things they need to be doing if they're busy or with young children or if they're going through a period of grief. The other part that I think was really interesting from your caller and also the caller about the Eleanor Rigby song is that in difficult times sometimes we find solutions in music. They might seem sad and we might actually go through a short period that we might be continuing our sadness and even deepening it, and that seems really counterintuitive. But because the songs that are written in that sort of music are often also dealing with problems similar to our own, they often also contain solutions or ideas or different ways of looking at a problem that we might not be otherwise having access to. So the idea that through Eleanor Rigby you could actually decide, I've got two choices here. I can go this pathway or I could go this other pathway that I hadn't thought about, and all of a sudden the alternative pathway seems more attractive. So that was a different way of looking at things, and I think often in those periods, whether it's grieving or sadness or anger, music can give us a whole range of new ways of looking, new perspectives that can be really helpful, and that's a really positive way of using music. Even if it seems sad, it can really move you through into a solution.
It's a kind of emotional resonance, isn't it, that's going on between you and the creator of the music.
That's right, yeah, and that's why we're attracted and drawn towards certain types of music when we're in that mood. And it's not just sadness, it's also anger. You know, if we're feeling tense and angry about an issue, often we're drawn towards that sort of music. And there's been all sorts of claims about particularly young people listening to angry music or heavy metal music and whether that's beneficial. And often it can be, not always, but often it can be if, again, it's listened to with a thought in mind that, it might be doing something to regulating their emotions, perhaps, venting and expressing that emotion, but also contained in that, there's that resonance, as you say, with the composer or the performer, that it's someone else they might respect that's feeling the same as them, and therefore, that's okay, I can get through this, and there are other ways to deal with it. And sometimes contained in the music there can be positive solutions. Other times there can be negative solutions in the music too.
And what is the study, in particular what's going on in the brain when it comes to, we hear about the major chords and the happy music and the minor chords, the sad, so-called sad chords. What are the what's the research or the sense of what's happening in the brain when we're listening to those sounds that have been created from the composer that give us that response?
Okay. So, again, there's a bit of inconsistency, but there's a bit of a debate about when we listen to sad music, how much do we actually feel sadness? Originally, there was a bit of a question mark. Why would we be drawn to listening to sad music when usually with emotions we avoid sad things that would make us sad? It's pretty much accepted now that, yes, you can feel real sadness when you listen to sad music, but you also can appreciate music on a different level. So you might be feeling some of the experiences and some of the same pathways in the brain that would happen with real sad emotions. But you've also got this aesthetic appreciation of the beauty in the music, perhaps, that is activating probably reward centres and pleasure centres in the brain as well. So yeah, you often have, again, a really complex activation in the brain that's not as simple as this is just a sad emotion. Mm. There's more to that, and it can be extremely rewarding to listen to sad music, particularly if you're also listening to it at that sort of intellectual level and appreciating the structure, beautiful classical music. Even if it's sad, you also feel great happiness.
We're talking music this morning on Life Matters. Robbie Buck, one final morning filling in for Natasha Mitchell. She'll be back on your radio on Monday. But it's our Friday talkback, music that's had a pivotal role in your life. And why? Why do you think it has played that role? Have you thought about a piece of music that has been with you for such a long period of time, perhaps even in its own way changed the course of your own life? The number here, 1300 225 576, that's the talkback line here. If you're having trouble getting through, then you can always leave us a comment on the listener comment line. That's 02 833 1430, or join the conversation via the website or via our Facebook page. Let's go to another call this morning. Nigel has phoned in New South Wales. Hello, Nigel.
Good morning.
Yes, your piece of music, if you like, or your relationship to music that has had a lasting effect on you.
Well, I've been playing and writing music all my life, more than 70 years, and I still remember very clearly being in the laundry when my mother's maid was doing the washing, and there was lots and lots of steam in the laundry, and she was singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
What a beautiful song it is, too.
It is.
We'll talk about this too, because the very earliest memories can be so powerful and have such a strong effect right through the rest of your life. Are there times that you've heard that song in completely dislocated contexts and it's brought memories rushing back to you?
I don't remember hearing it very much because I don't normally listen to that sort of music because I write more so-called modern classical music.
Right.
And so I don't really hear it. But if I did, I'd be terribly pleased. Oh, yes, it would definitely remind me. Because I remember it very clearly.
You've never stepped into an elevator and heard a Muzak version of it playing somewhere?
No, I haven't, no.
Well, if I had it with me, Nigel, I'd play it for you this morning, that's for sure.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Margaret, also in New South Wales this morning. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, how are you this morning?
Very well. So, yes, music and you and a pivotal piece.
Oh, a pivotal piece. I could pick one in particular. There are just so many. Mm. Because from the age of five, I can remember being in the first school concert, and I was the daughter of Officer Kelly, and my partner, who was 2 years older than me, and he and I still keep in touch. It's just the memories that music brings back to me. I can hear a piece of music and I think, yes, that piece of music was requested for me to play or sing by so-and-so. And it brings back that image of that person to me. So it's good for my memory. And I'm 76 now and I can still remember music that my mother used to sing, Beautiful Isle of Somewhere and songs like that. Mm. And I just think it's so good to stimulate your brain. I've seen people with dementia who have forgotten who their relatives are, but they can still sing a song and know all the words.
Yes, it's able to embed right into the very the deep parts of the brain, isn't it?
I was thinking of Hazel Hawke. Look at her. Mm. Even though she was so sick, she still played music, and that's how it's been with me because I used to play sometimes like at the church. I might sing at a wedding. Mm. I might play at the bowling club and people would request me to play or sing something. And I hear that song now, Between Two Trees, and immediately I can remember that was Danny Rapley's favourite song. So it's just it's tied my whole life together, yeah, really. Yeah.
Lovely story. Thank you ever so much, Margaret. And it raises a good few great little points that we'll pick up on as well. In fact, Al Kaya, who's in Tasmania, might carry on that conversation. Hello.
Hello.
You work as a music therapist as well.
I do. I work as a music therapist with people who have dementia.
And what's your experience with it? How powerful can it be?
It's amazing, actually. It does lots of things on many levels. It triggers memories. It brings joy to people. It opens up windows of expressing how they're feeling, you know, where they are. And it gives a connection for people so that, you know, for me, working with people, I have a connection with them. You know, like it opens up a way for us to relate to each other.
Mm.
And it helps families. So people with dementia, they might, you know, remember part of their life through a song and remember the words, and then their family members are there and then they can together remember together.
So how do you go about finding the piece of music that's going to fit with the individual person? We spoke about this a little bit earlier on, that different people have different calibrations, if you like, to music. And whilst one piece of music can leave them feeling nothing, another piece of music can bring them to tears. How do you find the right song or the right piece of music for them?
It's a journey of discovery. You know, I'm always discovering songs that suit different people. But I have a sort of backlog of songs from different eras or from, people... Often when people had important things happen in their lives, you know, when they were falling in love or when they were, you know, going off on their own for the first time as teenagers or when they had an important thing happen to them, like someone died or something important, then songs bring that back to them. So I'm always discovering songs for different people and songs from different cultures and lullabies and, lots of songs of different reasons work for different people.
And, Alkaya, when it works the best, when you get really the very finest response, what happens?
It's different for different people, but the joy is wonderful to share. And I feel very privileged to be able to work with people who have dementia because I get to be part of that. But it's really bringing them to a place of peace too, so that they for people with dementia, they often get agitated because they don't know where they are or they've forgotten and they're shut down also. So it brings them, it opens it up so that they become present and they can be more relaxed and have connections with people.
And that can be very powerful, obviously.
Very powerful. And also in a dementia wing, I work in a few secure dementia wings, and so it can calm the whole place down as well. That's very profound. So, you can use music instead of using drugs to calm people down, for instance. Mm.
Thanks so much for the call this morning, Alkaya.
Great
to hear from
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
A few comments that have come through on Facebook as well about this conversation, and you're more than welcome to join us for that conversation on the Life Matters Facebook page or via the website at abc.net.au/radionational. Look for Life Matters. Ruth left a comment on the Facebook page. Music is a memory stimulant. It's often used with dementia patients. I've seen people who haven't responded to anything be moved by a certain song. Tears flow, memories ignited. It's beautiful to see. And you wouldn't believe what they respond to. An all-time favourite is this one. So there you go, some of the music, or at least this one piece of music, very recognisable, that has been particularly effective in Ruth's experiences when it comes to using music as therapy, working with people with dementia. God Save the Queen, who would have thought? Katrina McFerrin, does that make sense to you, that a song like God Save the Queen can be still so powerful to people?
Yeah, I think that's really consistent with the descriptions that people have been making on the call from your music therapist through to people's actual experience. You can practically hear the school assembly that we're all trained to stand up and place a hand on our heart and listen to that song. So it does evoke profound memories. But the other part that was really conspicuous in what people were talking about was it's not just individual memories, it's memories that connect them to other people. And I think that's what
the other part of what's profound about music is that it actually enhances relationships between people in ways that transcend perhaps other differences that they have with those same people. So we could all come together in this response to God Save the Queen in this shared memory, whilst from that time we might have gone in very different directions from all the other children that stood up and listened to that song. So I think that that's what's significant about music in comparison to other art forms in particular. It's that it can bring people together.
Nicky Ricard, Nigel, one of the earlier callers, was talking about hearing that piece of music, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, as a very young child. And those early memories, when you think back, that moment that a piece of music really affected you, and I think all of us can. I can remember being five, living in a house in England, and my brother playing The Who, and the sound of that coming out of his bedroom door. It was I Can See for Miles, and stopping in the hallway just for a moment and thinking, what is this? What is this sound that suddenly it has a real effect, emotional effect to you, and that sense of wondering what it is. How open are our brains to music very early on?
Oh, very, very open. We start learning from in the womb. There's emotional responses that are happening very early, and they're often very similar, those very basic responses to happy and what we call happy and sad music in terms of major and minor mode and fast versus happy. Very young infants respond and have preferences towards often happier music. And in terms of what's happening in the brain, we know there is so much going on in terms of that developing brain, and already music is one of the things that shapes the brain from birth. So it can do wonders. I mean, we hear a lot about music training in terms of from young age, under 7 years of age or so, if we receive musical training, there's a measurable difference in the complexity of the brain in a number of areas as a result of that, and that might have flow-on benefits for how we learn at school. But beyond that as well, listening to music is a really complex activity, and appreciating it and having emotional responses to it and linking it with other activities and sharing social events with others, all these things can be shaping our brain from a very early age. So I think those events in childhood are incredibly important.
And for most of us, the first music that we hear is the music of our mother singing to us, isn't it?
That's right. Yes, mother, and more so fathers as
well.
And
fathers too. But does that have does that provide a very strong link or role from that very early age to associate it with that?
Yeah, and it's one of the primary reasons why we think music exists in every culture that we know, and for as far back as we can record, we've had music in all cultures, and one of the understandings of that is the bonding between a mother and infant, that it actually helps to keep that bonding very tight. Before we have language, we have music to bond and tell an infant this is your mother, and to keep that connection strong and give a whole lot of other information through the prosody or the melody of the spoken voice as well. But through music we can impart a lot of information to our infants about calmness and confirmation that things are all right. This is all happening pre-language, so yes, that's very important.
That said, there's a fair amount of argument as to why music has continued from an evolutionary point of view in our culture, isn't there? I mean, the notion that it has carried on for such a long period of time, perhaps we can't quite define why it's still so strong in our culture.
Yeah, it's an ongoing debate, and there's lots of different explanations for that. And I think the social reason is goes beyond even this maternal-child bonding. It's the cohesiveness we've talked about in terms of getting a group of people together. It can be as simple as the rhythmic entrainment. When you get a large group of people together, that feeling of community is so effective and so strong, and it's quite hard to get that cohesion happening sometimes with a very large group of people with something like language. Your voice just doesn't transmit that far, so you can't combine a large group in the same way that music can at a sporting arena, an army, a marching. All these things are really effectively bound together with music. But look, there are all sorts of other explanations, and a lot of those are physiological, just the reward that we have when we listen to music.
So dopamine, for example.
That's right. Dopamine release and the reward centres of the brain that are activated mean that it will continue on. We'll keep trying to achieve this same state in that way. I think the memory argument keeps coming back too. I think it plays an important role in sort of binding more strongly or consolidating more strongly really significant events in our life. We know that often music accompanies significant events. If we think about, you know, funerals, weddings, our ritual is to often have music in those events. But they confirm, they bind even more strongly these events in our lives. So sometimes other information that's not significant gets bound along with it. So some of the callers have been talking about having a significant music event and, you know, listening to The Who, or for me it was listening to Willy Wonka, you know, pure imagination, a beautiful song, and I can remember every other thing that happened at that time when I heard that when I was very young. And even though a lot of those other events aren't significant, they get bound together in this really complex network that's being, you know, cemented down in our brain. And music is a really effective way of tagging that whole network as a significant event. So then later on we have we hear a little snippet of the music, and that's enough. It's a really effective retrieval cue to activate that whole network of memories. And that's why I think we see some of these events that callers are talking about, even into periods like dementia, when so much has been lost, these very strong memories that are often tied up with music remain, are persisting beyond a lot of other loss.
Yes, the role that music has had in your life, particularly if it's a pivotal piece of music for you. 1300 225 576. My guests this morning are Associate Professor Nikki Ricard from the School of Psychology and Psychiatry at Monash University in Melbourne. Her work looks closely at how music interacts with our emotions. And Dr. Katrina McFerrin, Head of Music Therapy at the Melbourne Conservatorium of Music. Let's take another few calls. Kate's in Queensland. Hello, Kate.
Oh, hi there. Good morning. I'm just loving this show. It just resonates so much with our lives this morning.
Oh, great to hear.
Yes, and I've just got a magnificent story. Today is the 17th anniversary of our daughter's homecoming. After 12 years of marriage and 7 years on the waiting list, we adopted a baby girl.
Oh, fantastic.
And the day she came home, my husband played "A Little Ray of Sunshine Has Come Into the World." And that's been the song that's made the ritual, you know, of her homecoming. And today is the 17th anniversary of that. Now she's a 17-year-old teenager. And we have a little video of her homecoming, and her grandfather superimposed that song on the back of it. And hearing that song never fails to move us with every single moment that happened that day and how our lives changed forever.
It's a beautiful story, Kate. How does your daughter respond to "A Little Ray of Sunshine"? Is she okay with it?
Yes. Well, like today, after having a lunch with grandparents and everyone to celebrate the anniversary, we'll watch that little DVD, and it just, I think she's amazed herself, because of course she didn't realise all the joy and wonder that she brought to the life of everyone. But she herself actually has gone on to have a pivotal music connection herself, and is a great singer. I mean, but that song is just something that lifts our whole family, and through thick and thin, whenever we hear that song, all those wonderful memories come flooding back of the day our lives changed.
It's a beautiful story. Thanks so much for sharing it this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome, and thanks for the program. It's really moving.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
1300 225 576 is that number. Richard's in New South Wales. Hello, Richard.
Hello there.
So music that's played a pivotal role in your life.
Look, back in the 80s, I was a farmer up in northern New South Wales at a place called Baraba. Bill Bright was the harpsichord maker up there, well-known Australian.
Yep.
He moved me, he inspired in me a great interest in classical music, and he used to get, it's an outback town, but he got people like Geoffrey Lancaster and John O'Donnell on different occasions, and other very notable musicians to come and play either on one of his harpsichords in a town hall or on other occasions on a beautiful old organ in the church in Baraba, which he raised funds for the restoration. So the piece that really stuck in my mind, I was racking my brain to think when you started the program, you know, which single piece inspired me to something. and it was a Handel piece, I think, written for the harpsichord, and it's something to do with the blacksmith. I don't know if you know it, but it was the excited blacksmith or the hammering blacksmith or something like that. But it has peals of bells in the last movement, which just moved me, made my hair stand on end.
And for obviously there are lots of people who love classical music in that area, but there are others who perhaps don't have such an interest in it, and maybe that was your experience as well. What kind of response did they get for people who were just in there, in that space, in amongst that music as it was playing?
Look, I think lots of people were moved, as I was. I mean, the sense of something really special happening is heightened when you're in an isolated community, in a rural area, where you don't have a lot of exposure to that sort of fine art form. So I think, but there are a group of people who were bound to appreciate it. You know, those who chose to go to the concert knew that they would get something from it, which others might be less inspired.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're still enjoying that moment as well. Richard, thanks for the call this morning.
Thank you.
Denise is in Queensland. Hello, Denise.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. So a piece of music that's played a pivotal role in your life.
Well, I grew up in a family that we didn't have a lot of music around us, and my parents weren't very demonstrative in terms of their emotions. And one day, when probably, you know, 45, 50 years ago, somehow a Vera Lynn record came into our house, and she was singing. Someone put it on. I'm already sure of the circumstances now that my little sister and I were playing in the lounge room, and When the Lights Go On Again started playing. And my parents just came out of nowhere and sat on the lounge holding hands. My father didn't go to the war because he was in essential services. And they held hands and sort of sang along with tears in their eyes. And I tell you, my sister and I were quite giddy with the emotion of the moment. And on that moment, I think that the world shifted on an axis for me. And I can't hear a Vera Lynn song since then, but I don't get a bit teary, but a bit giddy and want to sing along with it.
Well, look, I'm sure a lot of people had that response to her music. Obviously, it was played at a very emotional point in the 20th century.
Absolutely.
and has had reverberations, the ripples of that effect flowing through over the years, including to your family.
Yes.
Denise, good on you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Carmel's in Victoria. Hello, Carmel.
Hi.
So a piece of music for you?
Yes. Music's been like another blood to me right through my life. About in the 60s, I was at a party one night, and a guy got up and sang a cappella, a Hebridean folk song called Eriske Lovelilt, and I could feel my whole body sort of, a shiver went down my spine, and I thought, my God, what a song. And I'd been learning music, I was into folk music and just love music. It took me a long time to approach the guy over several months, found out about it, got the music, and anyway, next thing I was on New Faces, I was put on there by someone, and I sang the song because it was live in those days on Channel 9, Frank Wilson, etc., Jeff Brooks, all those people, and I was very nervous and just sang it with my heart because I get very emotional with sad songs. Mm. And so I got through it, thank God. Didn't tell anyone.
Can I ask you, how did it go down in that sort of environment? You're taking it from a very rarefied, special environment into the artificial world of a TV studio.
It was, yes. It was very unexpected, I think, you know, even the song itself. And they weren't expecting anything like it. So I just did it anyway. And anyway, I got a very good mark, so much that I got a bit of a shock, people like Mike Dyer, etc. And I got a bit teary, and then anyway, apparently I won that night. The switchboard started to jam. I was interviewed by The Age because there was something with the song and my voice that all came together. And ever since then, I had to give away my day job. It was a bit of a shock.
Wow.
And then ended up making that record. And then at my mother's funeral, because I couldn't sing at the funeral, obviously, we played that record, and it all came together for me, the whole cycle of just that sad song that just hit a nerve with me.
Can you remember how it goes?
Oh, I'm not going to sing it now. You
sure, Carmel.
I'd be so nervous. No, I'm at the other end of my life where I've been singing nursing homes, and I've formed jam sessions. I'm down in a rural area now. But I find that songs like Danny Boy, I sang that with my... When my mum was dying, I sang her a couple of songs at the bedside because I found it terribly therapeutic for me. And so she used to sing me a song when I was very little called Tura Lura Lura. And it was a little lullaby that when I used to be very scared and having nightmares when I was very young, etc., she would just sit down at the bedside and sing this very soft, soothing song, which sort of helped me go to sleep. So I actually sang that to her when she was dying, and Danny Boy, and I could just feel the tears rolling down my cheeks. But it was just so, I find that sad songs are very therapeutic for me. I don't know about other people, but I seem to seek out, it just hits a chord with me emotionally. It feels good after because I feel like I've had a good cry.
Well, that's what we were talking about before.
It's,
it can be very powerful. Good on you, Carmel.
Thank you.
Thanks so much
for the
call this morning. Simon's also in Victoria. Hello, Simon.
Good morning.
You used to be in a boys' choir.
I sang in the Australian Boys' Choir back in the 70s, and at school we used to sing a fair bit as well, and I ended up, unfortunately, a few of the nuns took umbrage at my voice. They thought I was showing off too much, so I copped a fair amount of abuse and bashing from the good old nuns and basically gave away the singing. And a little while ago I was in St. Paul's Cathedral in London during evening song, and I was just blown away by my reaction. My gut just cramped up and I just started to cry, and I thought, what's going on here? And basically the St. Paul's Choir was doing their usual 5 p.m. sing, and we ended up coming back to Melbourne, and I joined the choir again, and I rediscovered the joy. And after 39 years of not singing, I recall now that I can still read music. I've still got diaphragmatic breathing. I can still get the pitch. I'm not a soprano, I'm a bass now, but and I do love choral music as opposed to pop music. I was brought up with classical stuff. And
can you remember what the piece of music was in St. Paul's that struck you?
Stravinsky's Alleluia.
Right, okay.
And
a very powerful piece of music.
Yeah, I can't find the words to describe the liberation this has made to my life just to sing. And I really regret being brought up in a blue-collar environment where singing was completely out of the question. Only so-called poofs and blah, 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 like I was called, would sing, and I just gave it away. And I really... I'm so pleased that I've come back to it. It's made a huge difference to my life.
Well, isn't it great that you did come back to it? And that moment in that church has had a profound effect. Thanks for the call this morning, Simon.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Really great to hear from you as well. Nikki, just wanted to go back to something that was mentioned before, and that is that the shiver and the thrill, the goosebumps that some people get when they hear a piece of music. Do we know what it is that's going on in the brain that can bring back such a profound piece of or feeling response to music?
Yeah, again, the chills are a really commonly reported phenomenon. Not everyone experiences them, but it's tied to those very basic level responses to music I was talking about earlier in terms of survival. So it's really tied to a really fundamental prepare yourself for what you need to do. And so somehow music is tapping into those very basic evolutionary functions in our brain, and it's the hair standing on our end is part of that response. So it's a very fundamental response it's having to you. If you're getting chills.
Katrina, is that what you're looking for in your music therapy? Are you hoping to get some of those hairs standing up on end?
Yeah, we are. But we're also very conscious as therapists that it's not always positive responses that people have, that sometimes that gut-wrenching feeling can be connected to sadness that people don't want to connect with. So I guess our role is not to particularly seek any reaction to music, but rather to observe how people are reacting to music that's powerful for them, and to support them in processing it. Sometimes to join in the pleasure and joy, as you've heard so many people describe, but other times to really sit with them in the sadness and then also help them come back, because music can take you so deep.
We could discuss this for many, many more hours, but we have run out of time this morning. Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us this morning on Life Matters. Associate Professor Nikki Ricard from the School of Psychology and Psychiatry at Monash University in Melbourne, and Dr. Katrina McFerrin, Head of Music Therapy at the Melbourne Conservatorium of Music. Thanks to the both of you this morning.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you.
And thanks ever so much to you for your calls today and your messages as well. The conversation will continue on the Facebook page if you'd like to add your thoughts or comments, or via the webpage as well. Today's program was produced by Gina McEwen, sound engineer Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. Thanks to the rest of the team as well, executive producer Jane Shields, Tracy Tromf, Lindy Rain and Siobhan Hunt. My name's Robbie Buck. It's been great to be sharing the mornings with you over the last few weeks. Natasha will be back on your radio after nine on Monday, fresh from a holiday. Enjoy her company then. A big thank you to the team for being so wonderful and helping out over the last few weeks and guiding me through. Have yourself a terrific weekend. I'll catch you on the radio on Monday afternoon. Until then, bye for now.